Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our next exploration in Houses 9 and 10, working with transformation of worry into its healthy role, which is that of clarity. So as we orient that direction, I'm just taking a moment to notice our beautiful weather out. We've had really consistent sun here for the past several days, and in Calgary, sometimes we can get some cloudy mountainous weather that gets a little gray, and we go through patches of that for a little bit. And I really enjoy when we actually get like more than a couple of days of sun in a row. There's just something about that lights me on up again. So as we head towards the day, I'm actually feeling like I'm really anchored by that sun. And that's going to be my resource, I imagine, for today. I was just sharing before the recording started about the quality of light that's coming in. It's already faded a little bit, but it was really, really soft over here to the point that I thought my camera was actually a little bit blurry. We're going to get into that orienting or resourcing, as I've been calling it, kind of as both, in just a moment. I wanted to let you know that I sent out that the survey, and I'm grateful for the responses that have come in, but when I took a moment to look at the responses, or I think I clicked the right buttons, it looks like it sent you to last year's survey and not this year's survey, but I couldn't figure that out in time before the call because I have yogas on Wednesday mornings, and I didn't have enough time to actually go, like, hey, what's going on with this? So let me take a deep dive into the tech of all of that later today, and I will get a specific email sent out if I need to change the survey, and I'll clarify all of that. So thank you for those that have taken the time to respond. And I don't know what it is. I don't know where something went wrong, if it did go wrong. So let me just figure that out. I'm not always the best at those sorts of things. It's not my strongest suit in life, I must admit. And I think that's part of just being human. Sometimes we have things that we're just a little bit weaker at. So I'll work on that. And I'm going to invite you to get comfy and cozy for today's session. If you haven't already, I'm going to invite you to take a moment to settle on in, make any adjustments, set up your blankets, your pillows, your chairs, wherever you happen to be situated. And just taking a moment to connect to your breath. Every inhale, an opportunity to call in. To receive. To drink in life. Every exhale, an opportunity to release. To let go, to make space. And every breath an opportunity to sink a little deeper into that cushion below you. Every breath an opportunity to sink a little deeper into whatever feels good about this. Taking a moment to savor whatever parts of this that just feel a little bit nice to be held by. And just because it's on my brain, I'm going to clear it out of my brain before we go any further. So I'm not thinking about it all session long and trying to remember it for the end and then forgetting it at the end of the session or anything like that. I don't want to run that risk. I'm going to send out an email clarifying about the survey either which way. I'm going to do that. I'll do that either today or tomorrow at the very outside. So I'll clarify whether you are on the right track with that current survey or not. And then I'll send you the correct one if I need you to start voting all over again. Okay. So I will clarify that all in the email just to eliminate any potential points of confusion around that all. Thank you. Okay, now that my brain can focus again, I invite you to take a moment to now purposely locate something that feels good to be with. And you can do that either outside or inside, however it feels right. You can keep your eyes closed, downcast as you explore inside of you, going for a bit of a tour throughout your system. Or you can do it eyes open and just take a little bit of a tour, a gander, if you will, throughout your space, letting your gaze land on anything in particular that just feels nice to be with. And just simply let yourself be drawn into that a little bit deeper, wherever you ultimately decide to land. Whether it's a memory, a part of your body, something that's an object outside of you. And the invitation is to let yourself just settle in the goodness of any particular qualities that feel juicy to be with. So see if you can list just two or three things that feel yummy to be with. And let yourself savor, drink that in. Much like you would like a piece of really fine chocolate or whatever your sweet treat is. Chocolate's mine. And then go ahead and let yourself, on purpose, drink that in while you also notice how the body's responding. Noticing how does the body seem to drink in that thing that's beautiful, useful to be with? What changes inside of your system, if anything? And amongst that all, continuing to drink in the goodness of your object that you're drawn to, along with your body's responses, and continue to let that rumble on through you. I'm going to offer these words as we settle in amongst that all. Thank you for the opportunity to gather here today. And thank you for getting to be here with each and every person here exactly as they are today. Thank you to their families that created them. Their ancestors that's held the family lines and the lineages as they've unfolded throughout time and space. And just amazing, wondrous, awesome to consider and delight in how that all came to be to arrange for the particular point of connection that's here in this moment today with everyone here. Thank you to the earth that holds us, grounding us, nurturing us, nourishing us. Thank you to the sky above, giving us space and room to soar, places to explore. Thank you to the fire, connecting us just to the edges of the unknown, the unknowable, the mysterious. And thank you to the earth, the sky, the fire, and how they all somehow interweave with the water, anchoring us into our very bones and our blood. And thank you to this water as it soars through us, as it connects us to the edges of our unknown, and yet somehow grounds us into our bodies through our energy that moves around our system. Thank you for the gift of being here, alive in life today. And thank you for the dance of knowing that at some point that ends. And we get to be here now amongst it all to sit with the aches, the feelings, the tenderness, the sorrows, the felt senses, the emotions, all that makes us humans. Thank you. Om Kausai to life. And as we head into today, we're starting off with a cellular repair, which is no small thing. Helps to restore cells back to their fullest potential of health. Going into the family lines. Just finding it. It's jumping around a little bit. Got numbers 3, 4, 5, and 6. So I think for everyone it's going to be just slightly different. And we're working with the masculine side of the family line. So we're going through dad's side, and it might be anywhere from generations 3, 4, 5, or 6. And for some of you, it might actually be 3 and 5, 4 and 5, 6 and 3, 3, 4, and 5, all four of them. You get the idea. And notably, these things do tend to have a trickle-down impact. So my suspicion is that most of us have most of those generations. And I think I've shared with you all with this before, but maybe not recently. Our bodies are thought to be nothing more than composites of the past generations, up to 5 to 7, says Body Talk, 5 proven scientifically, of information that is stored in our system that doesn't necessarily come from us, yet we're born into it. And then we get to explore what's actually here in our bodies. And the only way to do that is to actually feel it, to sense it, to understand what's here. And we're actually working with just that, the feeling of sometimes we are disconnected or disoriented or not fully aware of what's actually here in our body, or we're misperceiving it through layers of confusion. And it can take a very long time to begin to unconfuse the system, for lack of better terminology. And why that is that confusion actually needs time and space and distance. And because this wasn't like a natural skill set within the family lines for many generations, there's a sense of layered confusion, disorientation, disconnection, disassociation. Dis means a prefix in all of our etymology, meaning separate, like we're not fully here, meaning we're not fully present inside of our own being. Yet our mind will make conclusions as if we are, and it'll make firm and fast conclusions as if we know all the data, which we don't, because we haven't fully landed in every aspect of our bodies. Unless you can fully inhabit your body and be present to it, we're on some level of separation from that. And that's the human journey, I'm going to suggest. And that's really what health is to recognize that we are whole and to be able to sleep in an embodied way, to sit in our wholeness, which is in part what we're up to in this series. And because that was such a missing thing from the family lines, it's created extra, not just confusion, but I'm going to suggest that confusion and worry are in the same family. Confusion is really a form of worry. Worry is a form of confusion. And it's also created anxiety, which I think of as some part worry and some part fear. That fear is catching just a little edge of panic. Do you ever get a little bit of like tinnitus in your ears, or there's like that ringing and that sensation and that pitch? It's like there's that tinny, as I'll call it, pitch or sound. Tinnitus meaning like that buzz that you can sometimes hear inside of your brain. Sometimes people hear it outside too. And this is what we're working with. It's like the territory of that panic or that anxiety, that fear, that keeps us inevitably at a baseline of disconnection or not being present fully to ourselves, which is in every single human being I know. Some are just more aware of it than others. And we're linking that into the part of you that makes up meaning, the part of you that decides whether or not things are this way or that way. And we're just supporting your meaning maker, so to speak, the part of you that decides what's true or not true about you in particular, or what's true and not true about other people, your world around you, your environment around you. And our meaning makers tend to work on steroids. Like they tend to be really overactive. And again, the deal is we actually don't know the information. So they can't actually make up meaning that's accurate. They can only make up meaning based on however much information you're present to in your bodies. So your meaning maker isn't going to be the best judge of what's actually happening or is true out there or in here. So how do we know it's true out there or in here? I'm going to suggest it happens by means of feeling and getting anchored into our bodies. Now, this is a culture-wide thing that happens around the world. And Robert Johnson is actually one of the guys behind this territory. He's written books on this. Others like him, anybody in that ilk. And he says by the age of 2, boys are actually trained not to know what their feelings are and what the sensations are in their bodies and what's actually happening and what's going on for themselves. Girls later, more so by about 9 to 11, so somewhere around very early puberty, do we start to lose that. So girls have it for a little bit longer, and I'm getting really binary here, but I'm going with how we raise and how we've traditionally, up to recent times, raised boys and raised girls. And we've done that in very distinct ways throughout the generations. And it's changed over the generations, and we're seeing a bit of change recently, but most of this is stored in your body from many generations ago. So I'm going to stick to the binary way of doing it, because that's where it and how it was stored by your system, for the most part. And for the overwhelming, like 99.99% part, there's always an outlier. And as we work with that territory, there's a sense here of supporting the system in that cellular repair to rewire what it is possible to begin to use your senses, like your ears, to actually perceive what's happening in your body. The ears are the processing centers of the kidneys, as well as the kidneys rule our family lines, our ancestry. So it's like literally hearing your ancestors. So we're working with the confusion, not just in this lifetime, but ancestral confusion for many generations. Amongst all of that, we're working with circulation of nerve supply through the part of the nervous system that conducts hearing and makes up meaning about what we're hearing into our nervous system. And I don't mean hearing just in the physical sense, I'm also including the subtle senses. So our subtle senses of hearing are trained to hear what's not spoken. Those are often on fire if we're born in a family which doesn't necessarily speak openly about what's going on with them. So the ways that we keep ourselves safe, because we know something's up, we know that what they're saying isn't quite accurate, is we then try to make up other stories. And we tend to lean into those other stories that create a level of ongoing confusion, because we actually just don't know what's truly going on. But making up a story gives a false sense of safety. It's like that's a good way to actually survive, by making something up, so you don't get really, really taken down and feeling like you're losing touch with reality, because you actually don't know what it is they're saying, but you can sense that there's something off a little bit. And we're supporting this system and coming into balance with perceiving or hearing what's truly here, and opening up to your subtle senses being used in a good way to tune into the understanding that sometimes we actually don't always know what's going on with that other person. And we can listen to what's going on through a sense of compassion, or we can listen to what's going on through a sense of the hardwired survival, fear, anxiety, worry, and the various layers of confusion that go with that. As we work with nerve supply to reestablish that through the sense of hearing, we're going to do the same thing for the eyes. And it's like we're withdrawing. We worked, I think, with this last time, where the black dot in the very center meets the colorful portion, the pupil and the retina meet. There's this lens of, not lens, there's this intersectionality between the two, where a lot of our emotions can get stored through the lens of our eyes. And we're working with not just withdrawal of fear, but also anxiety, working with worry in here as well. I think last time we might have spoken about it in terms of panic, if I'm not mistaken. And we're actually just literally seeing the resolution of this by means of including not just panic, but also worry. Sometimes I observe things and I don't necessarily say everything. So I'm wondering if I said that one out loud last week or not. If I messed up on that, know that that was one of the observations that I had last week as well. And sometimes I don't even remember them until we're back in the territory of. So I love that we get to do this on an ongoing basis. And like whatever didn't seemingly get out said out loud that I may have observed often, if it's really important to come back and observe it out loud again, and it'll pop up again like it did today. And otherwise, I trust that it takes care of itself, because I open up a room to a door and I see all the things, and it would take me hours to explain everything that was in that room with that door, and then we're linking onto something else. So maybe not quite to that extent, but there's the general sensibility of we can't possibly verbalize everything that we're observing with the same accuracy. Words don't carry it in the same way. And as we release that, we're also releasing the pressure from both ears and eyes, in the sense that they have to carry this information in order to keep you alive, versus allowing your senses to do what they're wired to do, which is to be sensual, to enjoy our bodies, to enjoy ourselves, to enjoy our systems, and to allow ourselves to be humanly alive and reveling in the pleasure and the pain, but in a way that's actually tolerable because we're actually present to the sensual pleasure that's also here. They were linking both eyes and ears to, I observed it, I think on camera, I think on recording, and as well as before, to the quality of light that's present. There's something that happens around this time of year where there's almost like a warmth in the light that, for those of us in the northern hemispheres that are experiencing spring, as well as those of us who are in the winter hemispheres, in the southern hemispheres, pardon me, that are going into winter. You're actually witnessing sort of like the fading of the warmth as you go into the cooler sections. So either which way, we're present to a slice of warmth within the light that's here. For those of us in the northern hemispheres, I learned this term recently, and I think I'm using it right in terms of the wording, but I might be paraphrasing the actual words, but I have the concept right. And the idea is that there's a sense of spring sluggishness that can be in the air. And so often when we first hit that first warmth of light, then we are all of a sudden hit with this sluggishness, this wave of, whoa, okay, what was that? I'm coming out of something. And it's like as you first come out of like a bear out of hibernation from the winter, you are moving slow. You're not actually sure what's really here, what's going on. It's kind of like when you first wake up in the morning, except for doing that for our rhythm that happens annually, not daily. And in that, what's happening is the struggle from making it through the harder, longer, cooler, colder, darker, in particular days of winter carries a certain level of struggle in your system. And it's like now that that's over, now that the quote unquote emergency, to speak in other terminology, is over, your system can actually feel what's here. And sometimes when we first get that awakening, that first sliver of light, it can cause an uptick of panic. That's true of any other awarenesses. Like anytime we become aware of something, there can be this moment of like, oh shit, I gotta do something about that. I gotta fix that. I gotta change that. I gotta manage that. What is this here? Because this goes back to the very beginning of the session. We're not at ease of just allowing our feelings to just simply be there and be information for us. We like to make up meaning about them. And usually we make up the meaning that something in us is wrong in turn about that. And that we need to make it a problem to fix. And this keeps us spinning our wheels and forever fixing a problem, which our problem solver loves. And the rest of our system can get a little bit burnt out from that. It doesn't do much for the parts of you that enjoy life, that feel pleasure, that want to really lean into drinking in the goodness of life. So as we work with the, in essence, like the light, it's almost like there's a frequency that goes with that light that might almost, I'm gonna talk in ways that your senses may or may not actually be wired this way, but it's almost like your ears can hear a quality that's available in spring. For me, the sound changes because like winter sounds and summer sounds are different. And in spring, there's like the melting of the snow, so the sound doesn't get carried the same way. Our leaves aren't quite budding yet. Some of you might have that in BC. I don't know. Sometimes you get things way before we do out here. So other parts of the world may already get like spring buds coming in, and that begins to change the quality of how sound is carried. So I'm going to suggest that either that visual or the auditory field, we're releasing that spring sluggishness, we're releasing the struggle of the time frame of winter, knowing that we're coming out of a season that we're in that was maybe a little bit challenging to survive in many different ways. Like physically, we're in a colder climate, which means we have to be more careful about how long we're outside. And internally, our frozen snow states, ice states, can link into either shock or shame, frozen shame in particular, white shame, as I call it, white not being racial at all, but being the shame that we actually just aren't feeling. So winter is a time when we get in touch with all the things that we're not feeling so much. And then as spring comes in, it's like, oh, they're all here now, ha ha. Sometimes we consciously feel them in winter to a degree, but it doesn't really get the light of day. The awareness of what that actually was isn't fully here yet. It comes to peak more so in midsummer, in equinox. As we come up on spring equinox, it's like the opportunity to actually digest what's been happening throughout that winter season and allow it to actually make its way through your system. So anything that you've learned through that time frame, anything you touched in on through your body, through your feelings that your mind didn't necessarily know was happening or your feelings weren't fully made aware of, gets to be held, gets to be digested, gets to land as the internal learning of you and your environments. That's a very long-winded way of sometimes we can feel really burdened. We can feel really heavy at this time of year. So as we release that, we're also releasing it through the eyes, the ears, and we're linking it into the heart for awareness along with releasing, unburdening, or in body talk terminology, individuation. We're actually going to tap this part out here. Invitation to breathe and to receive however feels right for you. Okay, giving that a slow, deep breath. We're next linking the consciousness of the drum. So drum, like finding your own drum beat. There's like a drum beat of the earth. There's a rhythm of the earth. There's a drum beat of our different groups of people. There's also a drum beat of your family, and there's a drum beat of you amongst all of that. And that's, I'm going to suggest, anchored into your literal heartbeats. And as we begin to orient more and more towards the drumbeat of ourselves, it's not necessarily about thanking other people outside of ourselves. It's not about thinking that it's about other people, even. It's about reclaiming and standing in what was always yours to begin with. Oh, I love that. Listening to spring. Right on. And as you orient to listening to spring, I'm going to invite you to actually listen to your own heartbeat as well, amongst it all, because how you're springing to life is not the same as anybody else. It's not the same as how you're going to relate to, even though we all have common themes, we're far more alike than we are different. You have your own unique take on what's happening out there. And sometimes when we think that it's about other people, not us, we can get a sense of feeling like jaded around, like, when is it going to be my turn? When is it going to be my time? When are other people going to finally offer that back to me? And in childhood, we often learn to give love to other people and then hope that we get a breadcrumb back if we are raised in a codependent household, which I certainly was on steroids. Some of you might have been too, if you can relate to that form of being breadcrumbed by life and feeling the sense of needing to give everything before you can get even just a little bit. And that's, I'm going to suggest linking into patterns of overfunctioning, linking to patterns of overfunctioning as well as patterns of not thinking that you can just take it easy and have things come to you. Thinking that you have to work so freaking hard to get where you want to go. As we support your system in releasing those habits, it's going along with releasing the worry that what you offer won't come back to you, which it actually can't do if we're sitting around doing all the things and being over-functioning out of fear that it won't come back to us. So it creates an interesting bind here. That bind is actually going into babyhood when you were first born, and the cord was being cut. And actually, just before it was cut, even clamped, the sense of that blood flow already being cut off before it even got cut, the sense of the clamp. It's like, what's going to come when I actually don't have the resources that I need here? When am I going to get what I need to actually be able to breathe, to be able to receive life and to feel nourished by it? And that's also being echoed again when you went to your first feeding. And there was a sense here of not getting fully fed. Whether you were bottle fed or breastfed, babies actually physically can't take in enough food. And that's meant to happen on purpose because we're meant to orient to digesting not our food, but our emotions. So, with the very first feeding that we receive, we're actually supposed to be left a little bit hungry. And that doesn't mean like totally starving. It also doesn't mean totally satiated. And we actually begin to tolerate what and learn. It's like the very first learning of what it is to actually have just enough and have that be satiating in and of itself without being overfed or underfed. And the reason babies who are breastfed aren't getting enough is because they're fed not food but colostrum. And it's not necessarily as satiating in the ways that we might think. It's meant to give the baby the elements that it needs to heal from the journey of birth for the first couple of days before the milk fully drops. And for those of us who are bottle fed using other milk or formula, it's not satiating because it's not actually fully natural. It's not actually fully in alignment with the human milk experience or the colostrum. We actually miss out on the colostrum that we need to heal from that. And then we go into life undernourished, under-resourced from it all. We might even feel like we're allergic to things that are fake or synthetic. We might have a really low tolerance for fake people around us or things that we judge as fake. We might be really sensitive to things being kind of fake around us. So as we work with this, I'm going to invite you in imagination to give yourself a do-over, to give yourself a do-over of allowing your system to actually feel that sense of enoughness while you're also being breastfed as if you're an infant who was just born. And you can imagine that the cord hasn't even been cut yet. The cord is still intact. So you have oxygen circulating freely. You're getting your nourishment fed freely. And then with that, we're releasing the stress out of the adrenals, out of the nervous system that jacked up the cortisol levels to a baseline of anxiety, worry, and panic being more elevated. And that taking a hold within and throughout the body in various different organs, heart notably, lungs, and digestive system as a whole. Okay. And then we're also without releasing the habit pattern of outsourcing what it is we need to be dependent on another human being. And that definitively includes me. I'm up here just talking about things for you to put together on your own to spark enough curiosity for that to come alive in your own system, in your own unique way of relating to it. I'm not the one who's doing or fixing anything for you. You're doing that through your own awareness, your curiosity, your contemplation, your reflection, and your embodiment, your feeling of it in the body. So, as you do this all, as you imagine this all with the baby image that I just had around breastfeeding, cord still intact, the invitation is to feel that as much as possible in your body and notice what that's like to have enoughness. That's not dependent on anybody else. That's actually because you're orienting to what it is to actually have enough here. Okay, amongst all of that. going into the balance of the stomach and the spleen meridians, which go on either side of the neck, that help us to literally open up and allow things to come in through our mouth to receive nourishment. And then we're going to run a Siddhi on this whole pattern that I've outlined through the receiving of nourishment around breastfeeding, around the cord flowing freely, around feeling them in your body, through your stomach, your spleen meridians, which are very much about earth. And we're going to do a Siddhi on that through the neck. And as we work with the Siddhi through the neck, there's just another piece coming here. I'm just finding it. Ah, there's a planetary energy that we're going to work with as well, which is that of Jupiter, to support growth and expansion. It's also the natural planetary energy of the ninth house to support us in literally receiving that in an open-hearted way and to allow that to circulate and have that centrally received without necessarily having to guard the heart to shut things down. We're going to start off with circulation of all the healing resources. Blood that carries our passion, nerve or communication, lymph that drains our toxins, gunk, waste, low self-esteem, overthinking, over-analyzing, along with sheer vitality, consciousness or awareness, right down to all the little guys, electrons, protons, solitons, neutrons, working with the sounds, the colors, the frequencies of all the chakras, major and minor. Endorphins, hormones, and endocannabinoids that lower our inflammation, anxiety, depression, that help us to heal at all levels, in particular our nervous system and our immune system. And as we work with that, also working with the essence of yin, the feminine essence of nourishment, and yang, the masculine essence of protection. And then working with hydration, helping the cells take in water and joy and release any impurities that no longer need to be here. Then we're going to run with that planetary energy of Jupiter, in particular, bringing it in here to allow for all those elements to circulate in an expanded way to begin to receive the flow of nourishment. And to allow our system to actually drink in and receive this in an open-hearted way, in a way that's freer than it has been before. Then sinking into defrag, much like a computer defrag or a spring clean, taking out the clutter that no longer needs to be here or remains to be readily reorganized and utilized for healing. Then all the R's, reevaluation, recontextualization, and reprioritization. Getting out of rock and hard place type of thinking, opening up to possibilities where it may have seemed like there was none before. Then integration, introspection, shift in underlying consciousness. Thinking of this as the release, the surrender, the letting go. Amongst it all, we're going to run one more lymphatic drainage. This time it's through the diaphragm, that regular breathing muscle. Diaphragm, there's a bunch of diaphragms in the body, but just the regular breathing one. And working with circulation of that limb to clear out any, again, toxins, gunk, waste, low self-esteem, overthinking, overanalyzing. I like to think of the diaphragm as like a foundational shelf. The upper body begins energetically to press itself upwards from. And if we're collapsed anywhere in our posture, then it indicates that there is potentially a weakness somewhere in that diaphragm. In addition to all of that, our diaphragm helps us to process our emotions. And we've had no shortage of that happening today, as per usual in these sessions, and or opportunities to, anyways. We also have the opportunity here to look at the necessary amount or what we have judged to be necessary to control our system, to clamp down, to hold in, versus feeling safe enough to open up, to release, to allow, to make space. And to support that, we're linking it into the parts of you through that are anchored into your survival chakra, your root chakra, your base chakra, around the parts of you that haven't actually felt so safe. And we invite you to imagine now the parts of you that haven't always felt so safe, that are, for whatever reason, dealing with their own confusions around why things weren't safe, that were happening all the way back when you were an infant, not necessarily even now in life. We're supporting them in literally being held, in literally being supportively, much like a mother would or a father might, hold their child, their little one that was just born. I invite you to imagine doing that now, and allowing for any judgments, conclusions, opinions around lack of safety that are interpreted through our adult brain now at this age that began when we were infants, to be seen for what they are, with clear eyes, and to hear them with clear ears, and to listen and to see the springing of life forward in yourself through a new lens, which is really the metaphor of our whole session today. Coming together to you, coming back home to yourself underneath that which you learned that was true about you. So, we invite you to literally, in your imagination, hold. You might even see it as your base chakra, or you might have some parts of you up that you know are just not feeling so safe right now. And to turn towards them and to actually hold them as the adult that they need, as the attuned adult that they're looking for. To nourish their systems from this place, to nourish your system from the inside out. If you're not into babies, and some of you might not have had babies, you might think of it as how you might hold a brand new puppy or a kitty and nourishing them. The invitation is to breathe here. It's the invitation to do this as ongoing homework throughout the coming days, weeks, months, years. This is a practice that can be leaned into as much or as little as you feel called to. This is something that I do and have been doing for years now, daily. And it's a new orientation to actually landing in what's here versus what our mind has told us what's true. Allow your system to steep in its own care in ways that it didn't necessarily get back when it was small. And breathing here and noticing what happens in your body as you do all of that. And as you drink that in just a little bit more, as you slow down to give this the time and the space that it needs, I'm inviting you to check in to see what it might be like to play with this throughout the rest of your at points, not necessarily consistently, or maybe throughout, you decide, your day. And knowing that it probably needs much more time and space than the few breaths that's been granted now. Feel free to even lean into it throughout the rest of the few minutes left in this session. And allow your system to receive what it is to be soothed. And as you learn how to do this inside of your own system in ways that you might not have learned when you were young, it's a really common thing not to have fully had space for. You begin to create a new groove in your nervous system around what it is to actually be nourished from the inside out. Because just like we're no longer breastfed and we have to feed ourselves, and sometimes you have to feed other people as well, it's that same metaphor of now it's actually time for us to feed our system or nourish ourselves from the inside out. And many of us work with other people. This gives us the fortification that we need to be able to then, in turn, allow other people to learn how to do the same through us, through our presence, through our role modeling of doing that, whether we teach them that formally in any way, shape, or form or not. It's just imbued through our quality of our own practice. As we facilitate, the word facile, facilitate, facile is the root, means to make easier for. So it's like giving someone else a different picture of what that's actually like. And the thing that I've learned over the 24 or 5 years of doing this work is nothing works really well unless I'm actually involved in my own self-care, which doesn't mean that I'm not messy or my life isn't falling apart at times or that my own system feels really fragmented. It just means it's the practice of ongoing dedication. Not necessarily the where I've arrived to amongst all of that, because we judge that as being somehow ahead or behind of people all the time. But and I have to remind myself of that too. But it's the quality of steeping in our own self, and doing that on a regular basis, however we choose to do that, whatever your practice may be. And this is just one more layer of doing that. And that energy of soothing ourselves or learning in amongst ourselves gets to be imbued and shared with other people around us in ways that we may never even come to know the impact of, in ways that aren't taught through words, in ways that are communicated through energy, in ways that your body is talking all the time non-verbally. And we're linking that all to the thyroid, which is the center of communication that has nothing to do with it having to be done entirely through words. 93% of our communication is nonverbal, 7% of it is verbal. And here we're also releasing patterns of, I'm going to suggest, feeling like lack of humility, thinking that we have to be the ones to provide others with something is a form of lack of humility. And that, if it's not, this is a newer concept that I'm just playing with within my own self. I'm going to suggest, and it's a big concept, I'm not going to unpack it all in the next couple of minutes, that the lack of humility, we're not actually fully in our humility. We carry the level of emotionality around humiliation. Around humiliation. And undigested humiliation can keep us stuck in cycles of shame. Shame and humiliation tend to travel as a pack. Guilt is often in there as well. And as we work with more so just for now, the lack of humility leading to humiliation through the lens of overdoing, thinking that we have to be the one to figure it out. It's also working the pattern of thinking that you have to be the one to explain yourself so that you're heard. And that the more you actually explain yourself, the more people actually will hear you. And the more you strive to do that in ways, it can feel exhausting. There can be a buildup of resentment because people can actually only hear you in as far as they've met themselves. Which doesn't mean that we're not all still trying to bridge the gap and be human beings in healthy relationships. So we don't necessarily get to say over how other people are showing up. We only get to say how we're showing up amongst it all. It can feel like we're just barely being tolerated sometimes. So we're going to release that pattern of resentment, of shame, of humiliation, of lack of humility through, once again, overdoing, overfunctioning. What would it be like to just play with the edges of taking like a step so small it would be ridiculous to take? I'll give one. The other day I was noticing, I live with my partner and a roommate. Here in Calgary, actually two roommates, but one upstairs, one downstairs. And it works really well because everyone's always at work and nobody's ever really home other than my partner. I'm sometimes just home a bit more than the roommates, which is great for me. And I love both of the roommates, and when we do cross paths, it's a beauty to get to see them. But I make myself responsible because I'm on home all the time, amongst all of that, to replace the toilet paper. We have like one of those toilet paper things that has like the stack of toilet paper and then like the actual roll of toilet paper above it on the actual toilet paper roll. And I always restock it. And I was like, what happens if I just don't? Because I got a little bit resentful about like, how come I'm the one doing all the cleaning all the time? How come I'm the one taking care of like everything in these ways? So I was like, what happens if I just don't? And I did pretty good. So it has five rolls. And it got down to like three before I was like, I have to fill that again or I'm gonna die. And I was like, okay, that's better. Like I got to three. So I'll let you know how it goes. I mean, it takes a while to go through toilet paper. But yeah, I'm gonna see if I can like make it down to like four next time. That's how small of a step I'm willing to take here to flirt with this edge. Because there's something there that has nothing to do with the roommates, that has nothing to do with anybody other than me and how I was raised. Yeah. So I'm gonna flirt with that edge. And it's such like a ridiculously small step that you almost feel embarrassed to like share it, sort of a thing. And yet I think that if we actually could do that for ourselves and celebrate this teeniest, tiniest of smallest of steps, we'd actually be taking steps forward to build something, and we'd actually begin to change those habits that never seem to go anywhere. I digress. So as we work with that all through the thyroid, overfunctioning, and you can choose to do something in your own way about that if you like. I'm going to choose to do it in my way. Feel free to take the smallest step possible, is the point. And explore yourselves. Be curious about what that is for you. I'm glad I'm not alone in that one. Thanks for knowing that one with me, Sherry. Okay. I'm going to invite us to take a moment to breathe that in. As we tap this out, we're going to anchor it through to the midline of the whole body nervous system, all the way down to perineum. Which is our not just our center point, but it's the place where things can begin to surrender. And we can begin through that to learn and embody and anchor into deeper layers of trust. Invitation to breathe and to receive however feels right for y'all. I might be running over a little bit by a couple minutes today. I'm going to play a song that's just over 4 minutes long. Feel free to hang out if you can. It's called Soothe by Random Rap. I'll share the link in the chat feature. Invitation to touch into that resource that you found at the beginning. Let yourself linger there if desired, and or sit right where you are if things are feeling comfy cozy for where you're at right now. Invitation to breathe here. Opportunity to gather here today, and thank you for carrying the medicine that each and every one of you do. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Blessings on your day, your week. Khao sai to life. If anyone needs any extra support afterwards, please do hang out and I will be here. I've got a little bit of time. Wishing you a beautiful rest of your day and your week ahead. Happy walking to the beat of your own drum, y'all. Bye for now.